Hi, I'm Sonia. We've been off the air due to a Putin drone knocking out our transmission tower. Yet here we are again, back broadcasting to our global audience of millions from our spaceship flying high over... Oh, I've said too much. Take it away, Mr. Showbiz, you whiz.
Hi, hello, and how are you? You're Riffin with Griffin. We're back on the airways. I'm Sid Griffin, and that was Sonia. Thank you, Sonia. And you know who you are. Ladies and gentlemen, back on the airways. How exciting is this? We're not going to do a Christmas show. I've done so many Christmas shows in the past, I got tired of them. Maybe Christmas 2024 we'll do one. We're going to start off now with a birds-themed show. Now, there's no reason to play all the birds' big hits, because everyone knows Tambourine Man, Turn, 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 So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star, Chestnut Mare, 8 Miles High, yada, yada, yada. You know them. So this is sort of a BYRDS oddities show. Everybody in the Byrds gets their say. All the major players in the Byrds are going to get a tune. It's mainly stuff for the Byrds or folk rock fanatic in your house. And I dare say most of these songs, I'd say half or three quarters of them, even the Byrds fanatic on your street will not have heard. This is from deep in the Sid Griffin archives, what we're going to do tonight. We're going to start with Judy Collins from her album. It came out in spring 1964, Judy Collins 3. It's her beautiful version of Turn, 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 as arranged and done by a session man playing guitar on it. His name, Jim McGuinn. In a year, he'd be in a band called The Byrds.
To everything turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to a season, turn, 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 and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to build up, a time to break down, a time to dance, a time to mourn, a time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones together. To everything turn, turn, turn. There is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time of love, a time of hate, a time of war, a time of peace, a time you may embrace, a time to refrain from embracing. To everything turn, 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 there is a season. A time to love, a time to hate, a time of peace. I swear it's not too late.
They're working out in D sharp. Wow. You don't hear a lot of people work out in D sharp. Beautiful version.
Everything turn, turn, turn. There is a season and a time to every purpose. Under heaven.
She'd go on to greater things in many ways. Judy Collins, the Judy of Sweet Judy Blue Eyes by CSN, of course, but a great folk singer. And, of course, she had hits with everything from Sylvia Fricker's Someday Soon track. Or did Ian Tyson write that? It was one of Ian and Sylvia. Anyway, she had hits with Someday Soon in 67. I think Stills played bass on that, come to think of it. And she had hits with Sendin' the Clowns about 10 years later. Had a hit with Sendin' the Clowns about 10 years later. Judy Collins, a major talent in the folk world, still with us. In fact, me and the Cole Porters played a gig with McGuinn and Judy Collins. Oh, God. 12, 14 years ago at the Royal Festival Hall, about a 5 or 6 band act bill. And I looked out in the audience and I saw Gary Lewis of the Jayhawks looking at us. And I think Tim from the Jayhawks was looking at us too. Crazy night. Anyway, going back to this album, it's from Judy Collins 3. McGuinn plays on that album. It's 1964, as I said. It's the final track of 13, Turn, 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 on Judy Collins 3. And what's interesting about it is when McGuinn likes an artist like Judy Collins or he likes Pete Seeger, he really likes somebody like that. From this same album, Judy Collins 3, that Turn, Turn, Turn is on, there's also a version of The Bells of Rimini, and there's also her wonderful version of Deportee, plain record Los Gatos. Now, everybody knows Bells of Rimini from the 65 version on the Mr. Tambourine album. This one is Unplugged In Les Paul. You know McGuinn's solo. When McGuinn did that brilliant solo on Bells of Rimini. Well, Bells of Rimini's on this album. So that's 2 songs McGuinn took from this album to the birds. And there's a third, as I said, Deportee, the plain record Los Gatos. You know, the Woody Guthrie song, Goodbye to my woman, goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mis amigos, Jesus y Maria. You won't need a plane when you ride the big airplanes. All they will call you will be Deportee. Anyway, that's enough of that. So there's 3 songs, says he, putting down the guitar. There's 3 songs on this album that Roger McGuinn would take into the birds, which is pretty exciting when one thinks about it. And so you need to get a copy of Judy Collins, number 3, her third album. If you want to be a birds fanatic like Sid Griffin, if you want to grow up and eat your spinach and be a fireman, that's fine. But if you want to grow up and avoid spinach and gainful employment and be like me, go out and get a copy of Judy Collins 3. Moving right along, within a year, or just about a year, the birds were recording Turn, Turn, Turn for their second album. It was an American number 1 for 3 weeks at Christmas 1965, a really good protest song at the time of rising racial tensions and the civil rights movement hotting up, and the increase by President Johnson of our presence in Vietnam and instituting a draft to take our young guys over there. So McGuinn and the band The Birds have come into their own as an act, and they recorded the following 2 songs. Now, we're going to do them slightly out of chronological order. The first one we're going to hear now, it's a Gene Clark classic that was the flip side of Turn, Turn, Turn in 1965, and this is a version of She Don't Care About Time that even most bird fanatics have never heard. Take it away, Roger.
And staircases every day to climb, to go up to my white wall room out on the end of time, where I can be with my love, for she is all that is mine, and she'll always be there, my love. Don't care about time. I laugh with her, cry with her, hold her close, she is mine. The way she tells me of her love, how never is she tried. She don't have to be assured of many good things you'll find. And she'll always be there, my love, don't care about time. Mm-hmm. dark and deep with love. Her hair hangs long and fine. She walks with ease and all she sees is never wrong or right. And with her arms around me tight, I see her all in my mind. And she'll always be there, my love, don't care about time. She'll always be there, my love, don't care about time.
'65, baby. What could be more 1965 than Jackie DeShannon, the great songstress behind When You Walk Into the Room that the Searchers did. What a riff. God dang it, Jackie. Not only that, Jackie DeShannon is a very attractive blonde lady. I know you're not supposed to say that anymore, but I'm trying to give a description of her, and it's germane to the issue, who had many... many escapades when she went out to Hollywood. From where? From Kentucky. Woo! She's from Kentucky, just like me. Is there a connection there? No, not really. I never met her. But she was on the Beatles tour in 1965, I believe. Or was she on the 64 tour, opening for the Beatles? Can't remember. But anyway, that is 1965. And here's the story from that. We just heard Splendor in the Grass by Jackie DeShannon. So what, you say? Ah, but the backing band is the original Five Birds. And if you listen to it, it's a little sloppy. Because, you know, the original Five Birds weren't a tight band. As Chris Hillman once told me, says the name dropper, Chris Hillman once told me, I think even in his house, that the thing about the Byrds was is they didn't have a Hamburg. They didn't have a Star Club residency where they forged friendships and forged a musical bond under the heat of playing 6 hours a night or whatever it was the Fab Four played. So the Byrds were a bit of a pirate ship, each man for himself. It's interesting, though, to listen to that track. They're just a little bit sloppy on it, just a little bit sloppy. They could be a little tighter, but, you know, whatever. It's 1965. You can hear Gene singing a low harmony to Jackie DeShannon. That's the late Gene Clark. And it sounds like he doesn't quite know the song that well. But anyway, it appeared on one of her albums. It didn't appear on a Byrds album. It appeared on the Jackie DeShannon album of the era. And people said, what was the connection there? Well, what went down was, is Jackie DeShannon, when managers Ed Tickner, who took kind of the business side of things, and co-manager Jim Dixon, who took care of the creative sort of side of things in the Byrds first, the Byrds manager from the Dots, like late summer 64, or really spring 64, I guess, till they were dumped around the Monterey Pop Festival, June 67. And Dixon told me, he said, yeah, Jackie DeShannon was one of the first people in Hollywood to quote unquote get the Byrds. And because she'd already had some hits and had written When You Walk Into the Room and was a known singer-songwriter and a presence on the scene, when Jackie DeShannon threw her weight behind the Byrds, it was kind of a big deal. So the Byrds said thank you to her by recording her song, Don't Doubt Yourself, Babe, on the first Byrds album, Mr. Tambourine Man, which went gold in 1965, back when albums did not go gold frequently at all. It was an era of singles. So anyway, there's a real connection between Jackie DeShannon and the Byrds, and we just heard on that song, Splendor in the Grass. That's the Byrds backing her up on one of her own tracks, one of her own records. And before that, we heard one of the greatest B-sides of all time. Why, She Don't Care About Time was not placed on the Turn, Turn, Turn album. I can only conjecture. I can just guess. Gene had a lot of songs on the first album, and he only had a handful on the second album. I guess maybe the guys were a bit worried he was going to dominate. His songs and Dylan's songs would dominate the band. They'd get left behind. Who knows? That's conjecture on my part. Anyway, it's one of Gene's very best songs. To this day, McGuinn will pop it into his solo set, and he'll sing it. And he does a great version. It's a great, great song. Roger does a brilliant Jesu, Joy of Man's Desire Bach guitar solo in the middle. And for some reason, it was recorded at a session where the Beatles were there. Yes, John, certainly Paul and George were there, and I think John was there too. Ringo didn't make it, but it was recorded in front of the Beatles. And what was odd is they first tried a solo with, as you can hear, they tried a solo with Gene playing a harmonica duet with Roger's solo. Then they played on harmonica. Then they had Michael Clark, the drummer, come out and play a harmonica solo as a duet with Roger. And that's a slightly different mix with the harmonica. But in the end, they wisely chose new harmonica at the solo and just Roger doing that brilliant Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring solo. One of the great rock and roll solos of all time. I got to say it. So we're moving along now. The Byrds, it's 65. We're going into 66. From the next song we're going to hear is from the 66 era. Things start to get a bit, I'm going to pick up the guitar again. Things start to get a bit crazy, a bit psychedelic. We've left folk rock behind this sort of... You hear me? That kind of thing, kind of coming in. And who's going to do that? The genius that is Gabor Szabo. We're going to hear him right now on a track called Gypsy 66. And you will not believe what it sounds, who it sounds exactly like. Thank you.
love I find becomes part of the mind. The light still shines in the back of my mind. My mind goes high, my mind goes low, to find my brothers and help the others to grow. The love's still there for those who share. My mind goes high, my mind goes low, to find my brother.
Yeah.
And help the others to grow.
Sounds like the Birds, doesn't it?
I am a stranger.
Yeah, Blackburn and Snow. That was written by David Crosby. When the Birds started on the Tambourine Man album and the Turn, Turn, Turn album, their two most popular albums for a long time, till the Greatest Hits album came out in 67, their producer was Terry Melcher, and Terry Melcher also produced for Paul Revere and the Raiders as well. Melcher didn't like Crosby's songwriting. In fact, it's safe to say he didn't like David Crosby. He told me that, well, I won't repeat the joke he made at David Crosby's expense, because poor David Crosby was always nice to me and left us this past January. So I won't repeat the joke. And Melcher's not here anymore either. He's in his, enjoying his celestial reward as well. He and Crosby are probably up there in heaven now having a debate about something. But anyway, Stranger in a Strange Land was written for the Birds by Crosby when he lived with Paul Kantner of the Jefferson Airplane, Jefferson Starship, back in 63, 64. It was rejected by Terry Melcher, but the backing track is on the Turn, Turn, Turn reissue CD. So you can hear the backing track without the Birds' vocals on it. It was given to a San Francisco duo of Jeff Blackburn and Sherry Snow. And they were a popular, I don't know what you'd kind of, I mean, they were a duo that had electric backing behind them, but they also played folk things and did a Hungry Eye act, kind of like the Smothers Brothers, where it was just the two of them on stage. And people really loved Blackburn and Snow. So Crosby gave him this song. That song that you just heard, Stranger in a Strange Land, could have been sung by the Birds for the Turn, Turn, Turn album, but no, Melcher stopped it after they did the backing track. So fear not. I don't know what happened to Sherry Snow exactly, but fear not, because Jeff Blackburn, after this heartbreak of not making it in 66, 67, 68, Jeff Blackburn later became a member of the Ducks, with Neil Young was, of course, the leader of the Ducks in 1977. They had Bob Mosley on bass. And they had a wonderful drummer who's just passed away about a year or two ago called Johnny Craviotto. And they were a wonderful band up in the Santa Cruz area and did a lot of gigs. Neil Young put out an archive 2-CD release of the Ducks called High Flyin'. And why I mention this? Well, because Jeff Blackburn of Blackburn and Snow also gave Neil Young some lyrics. And he gave him the lyrics Out of the Blue and Into the Black, which Neil Young used in a song and gave Jeff Blackburn credit. So he's got credit on Neil Young's song on one of the most popular Neil Young albums of all time. So Jeff Blackburn did finally make a dent in the record industry. And before that, speaking of things that were happening quickly, was Gypsy 66 by the great South American guitarist Gabor Szabo. It came out, and his album that came out in late 65, the name of the album was Gypsy 66. Both that album and Gabor's next album are guitar playing masterclasses. The next album is called Spellbinder, and it came out in 1966. They were both on the Impulse label. You can get them as a 2-for CD. Many of the tracks are his beautiful South American, sort of classical boss meets bossa nova versions of pop hits of the day, like Bang Bang, My Baby Shot Me Down, If I Fell in Love with You, Walk on By, that kind of thing. But when he does instrumentals like what you just heard there, the 7-minute Gypsy 66, the 5-minute Gypsy Jam, the 5-minute Gypsy Queen, which is actually on the next album, Spellbinder, when he goes into those jams, does he not sound like the 8 Miles High era Byrds guitar work or what? I mean, it's incredible. Now, I asked around some of the experts of this era and some of the old guitar players, and Richard Williams, the great, he's now known as primarily a sports writer and a social commentator, but he used to be one of the big guns back when the NME and Melody Maker and Sounds were selling 300,000 copies a week. Richard Williams was, of course, one of the biggest guns they had in terms of writing, and he also produced he was also the presenter of the first year of the Whistle Test. And I asked Richard Williams, the British Richard Williams, who's still over here with us, I still see him every once in a while, and he said that kind of gypsy jazz thing of, you know, songs in 5/4 time and all that sort of a... that kind of thing. He says that was just in the air. He says not only were the Byrds doing it, other acts in the scene were doing it. They were extending their songs. They were playing. I've turned away from the mic to put the guitar down. Sorry about that. They were extending their songs. They were doing jams. So it was in jazz. It was in folk rock. McGuinn was doing it. Crosby, they were heavily influenced by it. So you hear it on really both tracks, Blackbird and Snow doing the pop, acid, folk rock kind of thing, if you could allow me that kind of a musical hybrid. And then Gabor Szabo on his album Gypsy 66, which I highly recommend to you if you like 8 Miles High era Byrds and you like Crosby's use of crazy chords and 5/4 times and all that kind of thing. We've got to move along. I can talk. Whoa! So let's go. A lot of youngsters out there that listen to this podcast, you know, we're getting 4 figures of listeners. I'm very proud of that. And I had a guy in Spain saying I was really good at explaining some of these sort of 60s and 70s tunes to his generation. Well, if you really want to get into this, you can get the DVD of the movie Echoes in the Canyon, where no less than Jacob Dylan, Bob Dylan's son and a great musical artist in his own right, does a David Crosby song. Remember, we're doing Byrds rarities and Byrds influences here, this whole podcast. What's Happening? He does What's Happening, and the guitar player is Neil Young on it. So you've got a David Crosby song from their Fifth Dimension album, right, which was September 66 release. You've got Neil Young on guitar. You've got Jacob Dylan, a recording artist star in his own right. They're all doing a great song, and as Neil Young himself said, the Byrds were the hippest band, and David Crosby was the hippest bird. So here's the new version of What's Happening.
What you're doing.
Guitar Tech. Hey, there's somebody on banjo. Whichever Guitar Tech, which gave Neil Young that sound with the distortion and the echoplex, that guy ought to get an award. You know, that's Jacob Dylan doing David Crosby's song called What's Happening. And David Crosby is the first Crosby solo written song to appear on a Byrds album. It appeared on their third album, Fifth Dimension, after producer Terry Melcher had been fired. They fired Terry Melcher, partly because Crosby didn't like him, and the manager, Jim Dixon, wanted to produce the record. So they got rid of a guy who gave them two American number ones and two successful albums. Incredibly foolish move when I think about it. And of course, Terry Melcher went on to produce hit after hit for Paul Revere and the Raiders till about 1970 or so. So he was a great producer. I don't think they should have sacked him, but that's another story for another time. Anyway, they got Alan Stanton in to produce, and Alan Stanton approved that song, David Crosby's solo composition, What's Happening. It appeared on the Fifth Dimension album. And that brilliant version with Jacob Dylan singing is from the documentary movie, wonderful movie, Echoes in the Canyon, from about 4 years ago. Neil Young's on guitar. And I never thought Neil Young was that hot a guitar player. Sorry to be a heretic to the Neil Young fanatics out there. But I saw footage of him jamming with, of all people, Led Zeppelin at some award show. And he sat in with that distortion and echoplex setup that he's got on Big Black, his big fat Gibson guitar. And he sounded great with Led Zeppelin. There was no clash at all. And I was looking at that thing where they had the Bob Dylan anniversary in around 1992 when Dylan turned 50. And Neil Young takes the solo on My Back Pages. You know, McGuinn graciously gives the solo to Neil Young. And Neil Young has that same distorted echoplex sound. It's fantastic. So I've really... And then on this song, What's Happening, he does the Roger McGuinn fills on his guitar. And it's in the way that McGuinn's compressed Rickenbacker 330, then he got a Rickenbacker 360 sound, is his legend on the 12-string Rickenbacker. I think Neil Young's got one going, a sound that's as identifiable as Roger McGuinn's. So let's hear it for Neil Young on the guitar. Now, interestingly enough, David Crosby, who was frustrated that material like Stranger in a Strange Land wasn't getting recorded by the Byrds, and finally got What's Happening on an album, he's never rated What's Happening. He's always said, yeah, it's my first solo Byrds composition. I did co-write some songs with Roger and Gene, like I See You, a brilliant song from the Fifth Dimension album, and he got a third of 8 Miles High. Fine. But that's his first solo one. The thing that gets me is, I think What's Happening is a terrific song. Equally so, Crosby says his first really wonderful solo song that the Byrds did is Everybody's Been Burned. But Everybody's Been Burned was written in like 62 or 63, and he just took it to the Byrds where they decided to do it. You can hear the demo he recorded for Jim Dixon in 1964 of Everybody's Been Burned, and it's wonderful, but it's like, I don't get it. Why doesn't he rate What's Happening? And I think it's just a terrific track. Anyway, enough about that. More Byrds, Flotsam and Jetsam, coming up to you right now. This next song is by the leading... there's no question, the leading influence on Roger McGuinn's 12-string style, and it's not Pete Seeger who plays a marvelous 12-string, it's actually this guy. This is Bob Gibson, and what song is he doing? John Riley.
On to the Ballad of John Riley. A fair young maid in a garden, strange young man come riding by. Said, fair maid, will you marry me? This then, sir, was her reply. No, kind sir, I cannot marry thee, for I've a love who sails all on the sea, and he's been gone for 7 years. Still he will return to me. But what if he's in some battle slain? Or if he's drowned in the deep salt sea? Or if he's found another love? He and his love both married be. If he's in some battle slain, then I shall die when the moon doth wane. If he's drowned in the deep salt sea, still I am true to his memory. If he's found another love, me and his love both married be, I wish them health and happiness where they live across the sea. He picked her up in his arms so strong, and kisses gave her one, two, three, saying, weep no more, my own true love, I am your long lost John Riley. Weep no more, my own true love, I'm your long lost John Riley.
Stand at every door, but none can hear my silent tread. I knock and yet remain unseen, for I am dead, for I am dead. I'm only 7, though I died in Hiroshima long ago. I'm 7 now as I was then. When children die, they do not grow. My hair was scorched by swirling flame. My eyes grew dim, my eyes grew blind. Death came and turned my bones to dust, and that was scattered by the wind. I need no fruit, I need no rice, I need no sweets or even bread. I ask for nothing for myself, for I am dead, for I am dead. All that I ask is that for peace you fight today, you fight today, so that the children of the world may live and grow and laugh and play.
Pete Seeger doing the anti-war song, I Come and Stand at Every Door. Originally a poem, a Turkish poem, written by one of their poets. And I've lost the CD, so I can't remember the guy's name, but it's on any, he gets a credit. So Pete Seeger, in the way that he took the Book of Ecclesiastes and took some verses out and wrote Turn, Turn, Turn. In the way that The Bells of Rimini was a poem and Pete Seeger put it to music. Pete Seeger took that poem, I Come and Stand at Every Door, an anti-nuclear war song. It's about Hiroshima, of course, and put it to music. It's on about 4 Pete Seeger live albums. Pete Seeger is a major hero of Sid Griffin. And McGuinn, of course, is a huge fan of Pete Seeger, as am I. Hence McGuinn doing Turn, Turn, Turn. I Come and Stand at Every Door, what we just heard. Now, when I Come and Stand at Every Door was broached for the Fifth Dimension album that I've just been talking about, manager Jim Dixon said, no, the lyric's sick. It's just a sick, ugly lyric about, you know, death and destruction and the kids' faces melted. Well, that's nuclear war. That gives the song its effect, McGuinn would argue, and I would argue as well. So the Byrds recorded it. I think it's a very effective song, and that's Pete Seeger doing the original, his version of it. I'd also point out that I was once playing it while waiting. I was in the studio waiting for something in the lobby, so I pulled out my guitar and started finger picking it. In fact, I've recorded this song on my second solo album, As Certain as Sunrise. It's got a blue cover if you go on Spotify. It's the same color cover as the Turn, Turn, Turn album by the Byrds. I'm wearing a suit on the cover, bizarrely, and playing a mandolin. I do a version of this where a Japanese friend of mine, as soon as I sing the lyric, he says the lyric in Japanese to give the effect, the comparison of the English language and the Japanese language. It was our way of showing the stark tragedy of Hiroshima. You've got an American guy singing it. We dropped the bomb. And a Japanese fellow just reciting it. And I think it's a very effective cut that I did, which is a very vain thing for me to say, but I've said it and I'm not taking it back. Anyway, that's the great Pete Seeger. And I was playing it once in this studio lobby, and this kid walked by and said, "Hey, you like This Mortal Coil too?" And I said, "I'm sorry, young man, I don't know the first thing about This Mortal Coil. I just know who they are." And he said, "Well, you're playing one of their songs. I come and stand at every door." And I said, "I didn't know they did it." And they do it. And they do a nice version of it. Before that, we heard Bob Gibson. Bob Gibson was, as I said, one of Roger McGuinn's, probably the 12-string influence on Roger McGuinn. McGuinn used to go see him when he performed at Chicago's Old Town School of Folk Music, where McGuinn attended to study banjo and 12-string guitar. Bob Gibson was a small stature. And he had the rather irritating thing. All his friends told me this. He'd go see the new hip songwriter, singer-songwriter in town, folk singer in town, and sit in like the front row and glare at them and stare at them and say, "You any good? What do you got?" But he was a talented guy. He sang real well, played very, very well. McGuinn uses a lot of Bob Gibson licks when he does the 12-string. And so before I come and stand at every door, we heard Bob Gibson do John Reilly. John Reilly, with slightly different lyrics, was, of course, done on the Fifth Dimension album by the Byrds, the same album I've been yakking about this whole Byrds trivia sort of podcast. And what's really interesting about John Reilly is it emanates from 1745, I believe, from the south coast of England called Gosport Town. Gosport Town, G-O-S-P-O-R-T. It's actually an old English folk song. Many people, Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys have recorded it, but they recorded it as Pretty Fair Maid Down in the Garden. But it's still John Reilly. It's the same song. I saw Dolores Keane of the Keane family over in Ireland at a folk festival. She sang 17 verses, but it's still John Reilly. It goes under a number of different names, but it's still just a brilliant, brilliant song. Fine singer and songwriter, Bob Gibson. Dylan's a big Bob Gibson guy too, but you knew I was going to say that when you get into the folk realm. Now we got to move right along. I'll be chatting and talking all day long. We won't be getting anywhere. I hope we can do another one of these. This is Byrds Odds and Ends for the Byrd fanatic on your street. And if you don't really know much about the Byrds, you can not listen to what I'm saying at all. Just let it go in one ear and out the other and just listen to this wonderful groovy music. So right now we're going to move along and hear a backing track. A lot of people said the Byrds were hit or miss back in the 60s as a live band. In fact, some of the Byrds have said that. This is a backing track of what was going to be the follow-up to 8 Miles High or Fifth Dimension. From 66, this is their version of I Know You Rider. No vocals, but just the four Byrds guys kicking some butt. Kind of a paperback writer version of this old folk song, and I wish they'd put vocals on this version. But we'll talk about that in just a second. Take it away, Roger!
seen her face. Her eyes reflect the colors in the sky. A warm, familiar place to be swept into whenever she's close by. Makes me wonder why. Run by, don't turn back. Can't hide from that look in her eye. Must be the way she walks, a style made up to capture all she needs. No time spent on loose talk. If your luck runs right, she might see you tonight. Everything in sight. Run by, don't turn back. Can't hide from that look in her eye. You'll find you're locked in her spell. All the sights and sounds, your senses will be found. And only time will tell how much love can be to wait so patiently. Wait and see. Run by, don't turn back. Can't hide from that look in her eye. Run by, don't turn back.
Okay, as you can tell, that's a demo. Let's talk about what we've heard. Confusingly enough, I'm going to go to the song before it, right? Here we go. The first thing we heard of that two-song set was a song called Rider, I Know My Rider, which is the Grateful Dead. It's a folk song, I Know My Rider. Everyone's done it, but the Dead do it all the time. The Dead do a 15-minute version, or maybe, I don't know, it's 15 minutes. It's a long version. On the Europe 72 album. I'm not a Grateful Dead fanatic by any means. I don't have many of their albums, but they do a brilliant live version of it on Europe 72. Now, the Byrds did it. They took the arrangement, kind of based it on Paperback Writer, and it was going to be a single in 1966, and they recorded several versions of it. That backing track comes from the Another Dimension vinyl release, which came out on Sundays. It was Sundays is a label, folks, not Sundays like the day of the week. Sundays like you're dazed by the sun. Those guys put it out. It was a 10-inch. It was outtakes from the Fifth Dimension album, which we could do about four of these Byrds Rarities podcasts because we're only scratching the surface now, not even putting much of a scratch into the glass. Anyway, so that was what the Byrds were doing in 66. My dear friend Paul Surratt, now follow me here because I know I've given you a lot of information and I speak really quickly at times when I get happy. I went to LA in 77. By 78 or early 79, I met Paul Surratt, who was in a wonderful band called the Shilohs back in 64, 65 with another guy called Graham Parsons. He and Graham did I Know You Rider in the Shilohs. And when Graham said, I'm leaving the South, I'm not coming back, I'm going to L.A. to make it, Graham went out to L.A. and, of course, got involved with the Byrds and became a member of the band Sweetheart of the Rodeo, leaving behind Paul Surratt, who was heartbroken. Paul Surratt joined the United States Navy and served off the coast of South Vietnam in the Navy and got leave, and he went to L.A. and looked up Graham. And sure enough, he saw everybody in L.A. Graham was at that time in the International Submarine Band, but follow me here. Graham's friend in the Shilohs, my friend Paul Surratt, was short hair in the Navy, and he went to the Whiskey Go-Go to see the Byrds. And he went to the Whiskey Go-Go, and he says, I distinctly remember my jaw dropping when the Byrds did a great version of I Know You're Right, the song we just heard there with no vocals. It has been released with vocals on the Fifth Dimension album, the proper CD of it that CBS put out about, oh God, was it been 12 years ago? It came out 14 years ago. So you can hear them sing it, but I really wanted to hear that, because people say the Byrds weren't tight live. And Surratt told me, I saw them play it at least twice during my 5 days in L.A. when I was following all the bands around. And they did a great version of it. And that is a cracking backing track. And again, you can hear them sing it if you want to go on. Even Spotify will have it. Now, let's stop that one right there. Moving finally into 1967, that was the 92nd version of Have You Seen Her Face. Where's the rest of the band? I'll tell you where the rest of the band is. They ain't there. Chris Hillman's composition, Have You Seen Her Face, him on 12-string, or maybe Crosby on 12-string. It's just the two of them. It's a demo. They live near each other up in Laurel Canyon. It's just a demo. I contacted the Hillmans and said, look, over the years, through bootlegs or legitimate releases on the Sundays catalog, which is where that one comes from, various demos of the Byrds have come out. Why don't we get them all together and have one final CD and vinyl release, the Byrds demos from the 60s? And they weren't really all that interested. I don't know why, but they didn't jump up and down. Maybe it's too late in the day. I don't know. But I think the baby boomers would love to hear it. But if you've ever wanted to know what a demo sounds like by the Byrds from the Younger Than Yesterday album, there it is. Have You Seen Her Face? Crosby and Hillman. I don't hear any of the other Byrds on it. Just those two guys. But isn't it absolutely wonderful? And by the way, Crosby's demo of Lady Friend, just him and guitar, you can hear that if you go on YouTube and look up Lady Friend David Crosby. And it's even been broadcast on the New Riders of the Purple Sage podcast and the Grateful Dead podcast. They've played that because Crosby's part of their family tree. But anyway, Have You Seen Her Face? I think the Long Riders did that on our spring tour of Europe this very year. How about that? So moving right along, as I keep saying, there's so much about the Byrds that you can learn from and get bored by being in my good company. It's not even true, but I'm trying to keep this up-tempo and happy. We've now moved into 68. The Byrds record in L.A. and in Nashville for an album called Sweetheart of the Rodeo. They have a whole new sound. They're trying to get away from the 12-string. They record Pretty Polly as a folk song, which McGuinn later recorded again on his Cardiff Rose solo album that Mick Ronson produced. And McGuinn later recorded God as part of the Folk Den collection that he puts a folk song up once a month into cyberspace and does a great job with that. But the first versions of Pretty Polly, that he recorded a folky version for Sweetheart of the Rodeo, and he recorded this version with 12-string guitar to the fore.
There used to be a gambler who courted all around. Pretty Polly, come go along with me. Pretty Polly, come go along with me. Before we get married, some pleasures to see.
I think Chris is in there as well. But there's two McGuinn vocals. I think that's definitely Clarence White on acoustic guitar. It's definitely Roger McGuinn and the 12-string Rickenbacker. Here's the story of why that brilliant song, Pretty Polly, the traditional folk song, again, the kind of thing done by Bob Gibson and in the bluegrass field, the kind of thing that Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys cut. In fact, if I may interject my own pathetic career into this thing. Sorry about that pee popping. If I may interject my own pathetic career into this thing, once again, for the second time, the Cole Porters did Pretty Polly for a long, long time. And as I recall, we recorded it successfully for our album Durango. Our album Durango was produced by Ed Stasium, who of course produces the Long Riders, the Hoodoo Gurus, the Smithereens, and many other hit acts the Jeff Healey Band had produced. And we recorded an album called Durango, and we cut Pretty Polly on it at Ed's home in Durango, Colorado in 2009, was it? We recorded that album, and Neil Robert Hurd of the Cole Porters says it's by far his favorite Cole Porters record that we did. I love our version of Pretty Polly. So anyway, they recorded it twice for Sweetheart of the Rodeo, in a straight folky version with the, I think McGuinn was on banjo, or maybe John Hartford was on banjo, and that brilliant 12-string version, two things. I said to Roger, again, name-dropping, I said to Roger, hey, why didn't Pretty Polly make Sweetheart of the Rodeo? He says, I love Pretty Polly. I've recorded it four times. It's on Cardiff Rose. I did it on the Folk Den. Chris didn't want it. Chris, the only other original bird at the time of Sweetheart of the Rodeo left because the other three guys had quit or been fired. Chris, it was just, you know, I've heard that song. I know that song. I'm sick of that song. He didn't want it on Sweetheart of the Rodeo. And we all agreed it was too, on this version that we just heard, which I think is brilliant, it's too much of the old Byrds 12-string sound. Now, in my opinion, I see that point. It might have stuck out like a sore thumb if it was on Sweetheart, because it does have the electric 12-string sound, which they were known for and famous for, which Sweetheart was the first album, which didn't. It didn't have any of the big electric 12-string sound on it. Just in a couple of songs, the two Dylan songs, it's here, it's there in the mix, but it's not loud like that. But I just think, big mistake, guys. You should have had it on there. Pretty Polly by the Byrds with Rogers 12-string to the four. What more can you want out of life? Anyway, that's the name of that tune, and that is a true story. So you're getting some secondhand Byrd information there, or at least I was in the room when all this stuff was being discussed, and that is what Roger said. He said Chris just wasn't into it. And I guess it's true. If so many bluegrass and folk people have done it, it's not exactly a fresh piece of material. We've got to move along. One of the things that gets me about the Byrds is the first six albums are genius, in my opinion. Pre-Flight, their early demos, that release, Tambourine Man, Turn, 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 Fifth Dimension, Younger Than Yesterday, Notorious Byrd Brothers, and Sweetheart of the Rodeo. Terrific records, right? The first half of the band, right? Chris Hillman leaves and Quality Control goes out the window. Now, the last six albums of the guys, a lot of people say there's nothing good on them. I've heard some real, and some Byrd fanatics just defend them, defend them, defend them. I'm in the middle of the two camps. I think each Byrds album out has at least two or three cool songs on it. From the Untitled album, which in my opinion was their last really great record, I think Untitled, the two CD set, one live, one studio, is one grade A song short of being a classic. I mean, how you can argue against an album that has a song like Chestnut Mare kicking it off? Just maybe one less Skip Batten album, one more Roger McGuinn album, and all of the things, just, that's a song, folks, all the things, just great. So anyway, Gene Parsons was coming along as a songwriter. He's the drummer of the Byrds at this time for the last six albums of their career, the last five or six albums of their career. And Gene had already written Gunga Din for the previous album, The Ballad of Easy Rider. I think Gunga Din was the best song on The Ballad of Easy Rider. So for the Untitled album, which again is in my B-plus album, and it'd be an A-minus or A album if they just had one more great song. But it's a good record. So this is the demo of Yesterday's Train, a crackin' Gene Parsons song that did make Untitled. But this version just came out recently on a Clarence White collection that came out about 2 months ago called Clarence White, The Lost Masters, 1963, 1973, when, of course, Clarence died being hit by a car driven by a drunk driver. So this is just guitar virtuoso Clarence White and his dear friend Gene Parsons, just the two of them, demoing the great song Yesterday's Train for Roger's consideration and Terry Melcher, who'd come back as producer, for their consideration to the Untitled album. And they agreed, this is a lovely piece of material. I agree too.
When you meet someone that you don't know, but you know them just the same, you begin wondering if she might chance to be an acquaintance from yesterday's train. Something in her eyes that you've seen before, a memory or a mistress from another world. But we know the trees are green and the baby cries from dust to dust, yet nothing dies. Yesterday's train is rolling. Can you touch it through the mist? Did you meet someone on yesterday's train? Could you tell it with a kiss? Could you tell it with a kiss? Who we are in this endless place, or where we are in this endless space. But we know that the trees are green and the baby cries from dust to dust, yet nothing dies. Yesterday's train is rolling. Can you touch it through the mist? Did you meet someone on yesterday's train? Could you tell it with a kiss? Could you tell it with a kiss? Could you tell it with?
Gene Parsons song, Yesterday's Train. Clarence White doing the fancy picking. Gene doing the finger picking on two acoustic guitars. Gene overdubbing his harmonica work. He's a good harmonica player, Gene. Good, damn good banjo player, Gene Parsons. He was also the Byrds drummer. Oddly enough, a good rhythm guitar player and a brilliant banjo player, so the Byrds had him on drums. You gotta laugh. He was kind of the Keith Moon of country rock. He didn't keep a straight. Like, you go see the old 97s with Murray Hammond on the bass, and their drummers, the Levelers, and a lot of British bands, they do that kind of cowboy beat. And Gene Parsons, if you listen to his drums on Bird Tracks and on the Untitled Live album, he's kind of like the Keith Moon of country rock. He doesn't keep a straight 4/4 time. He does all sorts of crazy things in the kit. More to it than that, that lovely demo that we heard of Yesterday's Train, which was accepted and polished up for the Untitled record with a more complete sound on it. Lovely version on that album as well. More to the point, Gene Parsons is the guy with Clarence White, the late, great Clarence White, who invented the Parsons White string bender. So I should have brought mine out. Wait a minute, I've got one. Hold on. Everyone, don't go there. I'm not even gonna, don't stop the tape. Keep the tape there. I've got one right here. Okay, now, bizarrely, this isn't my Telecaster B bender. This is a acoustic guitar. You can't see it, but you're going to hear it in a minute. So what it You're going like, and the B, can you hear that? So you're playing I Love You, Susie. Hear that? Once more time. Or up here. So you get that pedal steel sound. I forgot I had a guitar. This is actually an acoustic guitar, a Washburn acoustic guitar with a B bender. Can you beat that? I'm putting it on the floor, which is why it sounds like I'm walking away. So that was invented by Gene Parsons, who was a mechanic. He used to fix cars and boilers, and he used to fix steam engines. He's an expert with steam engines. So anyway, Gene Parsons, I first wrote him 50 years ago in 72 or 73. I wrote Gene Parsons to buy a Parsons White string bender, and we've been friendly ever since. I wouldn't say he's a friend. I mean, but I wrote to him about 2 years ago saying, I'm thinking about actually getting a Parsons White string bender because I didn't want to tell him, and he'll know if he hears this podcast. I've got two B benders, both of which are based on his system, but I don't think they're actually made by him in the way that you can get all sorts of guitars that are shaped like a Telecaster or a Stratocaster, but they're not called a Telecaster or a Stratocaster. It's one of those jobs, folks, kind of a gray area in intellectual property. And anyway, I wrote to Gene Parsons. I first wrote to him when I was a college student 50 years ago. And I wrote to him about the B-bender, and he wrote back and said, Sid, I think it's been, what, 40, 50 years since you first asked me about buying a B-bender, and you've never bought one. You gotta love that. Gene still makes records. He makes very sort of light acoustic campfire, informal acoustic records. They're just great. Check out Gene Parsons. He's a wonderful guy. He's still alive. I wish Clarence was still alive. Now, we got to keep moving on. The next record is the Byrds' worst record, certainly the original lineup with Roger in it when they kept going. They had an album called Byrd Maniacs. What happens is they recorded a wonderful follow-up to the Untitled album, which was got to about 42 in the States, maybe even 38. It was a pretty good hit, Untitled. It was selling, right? So Columbia Records thought, so Melcher went in the studio, and when the guys went on the road, he overdubbed strings and all sorts of stuff over the tracks, and he just way overproduced it without permission of the band. So I've been getting reissues of Byrd Maniacs and different mixes, and in Japan, many people my age will remember, speaking of 50 years ago, many people my age will remember Quadraphonic Sound, pushed hard by Columbia Records. Quadraphonic Sound was going to be, in the way that mono's one speaker, stereo's two speakers, we're going to make America and the world buy four speakers, and you had Quadraphonic Sound, right? Quadrophony by the Who, it refers to four, right? Sort of like 5.1 now, but that didn't take off either. Anyway, I'm losing you, I can tell. Anyway, there was a Quadraphonic release of Byrd Maniacs, their most overproduced, the album that all the Byrds fans agree is pretty bad. And it had some different versions of the songs with the way that Quad was mixed. If you took out two of the speakers, you got less of this horrible overdub stuff that Terry Melcher did. So let me give you an example of that. This was going to be on Untitled. They didn't quite finish it, so it was bumped onto the next album. It's going to be on Byrd Maniacs. This is Roger McGuinn with Clarence White and him goofing around on acoustic guitars doing a lovely, soft little ballad called Kathleen's Song before Terry Melcher got to put his crapola all over it. It appeared on Sanctuary number 3 on the Sundazed album. Sanctuary was a 4-LP set that came out over the Sundays. And on the third one, this track came out. And I think it's a lovely stripped-down version of a song that did appear on Byrd Maniacs. You got that?
When I awake, you will be gone, shady tomorrow. Stay home, letting my head time don't mean nothing to me. When only the owls listen to hear my song, and I will be walking in.
About how love can die. And in this song, Roger McGuinn sings about a love for someone named Kathleen, and it's a love that won't die. Again, originally slated for the Untitled album, it was then put on the Birdmaniacs album. That's a version where you can really hear Clarence doing some lovely picking in the left channel, a little flat picking for you, and Roger doing some lovely finger picking in the right channel. I think he did a more polished vocal later when they recorded it for the Birdmaniacs album, but I still really like it. Again, this whole podcast has been Bird's influences and Bird rarities that the average person hasn't heard, but even if you're a big Bird's fan like myself, you've not heard most of this stuff. Come on. And as I said, I could do three or four more of these podcasts. I've got tons of Bird's flotsam and jetsam floating around. Speaking of which, here's the last one. This last song of the night is by the late, great Gene Clark, who the Longriders recorded a song called Ivory Tower with on our Native Sons album. In fact, our Native Sons album is going to come out as a box set, 3-CD box set, on January 19th on Cherry Red Records. So look out for the Native Sons box set coming your way by the Longriders. What had happened was Gene would record into a reel-to-reel demos, just one guy, one guitar, one vocal. And he recorded for the end of the Birds, and then he re-recorded some of the songs for the beginning of his next band, which is called the Gene Clark Group, which was Gene Clark, Joel Larson, Chip Douglas on bass, and Bill Reinhardt on lead guitar. These are guys from the Turtles and the Leaves and the Grassroots, local bands. Unfortunately, the Gene Clark Group, the initial Gene Clark Group, and there was a second Gene Clark Group about 9 months later, they just didn't take off. They were sort of country rock before country rock, and people were thinking Gene's left the Birds, it's going to be more of an 8 miles high sound coming from Gene. Nope, it was country rock a little too early. He had a demo tape he gave to Dixon. It had 8 songs on it. Chip Douglas was the bass player of the Turtles, and he also produced the number one album, Headquarters for the Monkees. He produced his Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, and Jones LTD for the Monkees. And he produced a third Monkees hit album, The Birds, the Bees, the Monkees. So that's 3 hit records from Chip Douglas, including his work with the Turtles, of course. But producing three hit Monkees albums, that's pretty good innings right there, buddy. So what went down is there's this 8 song demo tape of Gene Clark floating around late 66, early 67. Dixon lost his, and Chip Douglas said he found his, but he had to bake it because you couldn't get into it very far. That means you literally take the reel-to-reel tape and it's stuck together. The brown tape is starting to oxidize. It's starting to stick, adhere, to galvanize to the bits of tape in front of it and behind it. You literally have to put it in an oven at a low-grade heat to get it to, as it were, solidify so you can take it out and play it on something without the tape just going to ribbons. I know that sounds crazy, but that you really do bake it in an oven, usually with the oven door open, by the way, should you try this. So they found the reel. Chip found the reel. And one of the, I think the first song on it was what we're going to hear now. So this is Gene Clark's guitar and Gene Clark's vocal from late 66, early 67. In tribute to Gene, after he died, I was in touch with Chip Douglas, who's now living in Hawaii. And Chip Douglas said, I thought I'd do a tribute to Gene and take this song, since we were doing it in the Gene Clark group back in 67, and I would put bass on it and some harmonies with Gene. So it would be a song kind of like Gene was in early 67, summer 67, the kind of thing he was doing. And I think there's another couple songs that came out on that Gene Clark collection that came out on Sierra Records about 3 or 4 years ago. But that's another story for another time. We could do this, as I said, three times, and I'll say a fourth. We could do three or four more of these podcasts. Anyway, this is a lovely tribute to Gene. It came out on an Australian release called Birds Parts 2 on Raven Records, which is a collection of Birds, Flotsam and Jetsam. And this is the last song of the night. He's no longer with us. His cult is growing as both a singer and a songwriter. Herb Peterson, the great singer who works with Chris Hillman these days, who duetted with Emmylou Harris on her number one hit, If I Could Only Win Your Love, back in the day. A great singer himself. He was in the Dillards. Herb Peterson once told me the best male singer he ever sang with and duetted with by far was Gene Clark. What a voice. Here's Gene, a 54-year-old demo. Chip Douglas has overdubbed that bass, and God, does it make the song. If I Hang Around, Gene Clark, we love you.
It hangs down, covers your eyes. Set to despise. If I hang around, should I sympathize? Someday you're gonna think about it some more. You're gonna toss your head and remember what loving is. Gonna think about it some more.
toss your head and remember what loving is for.
Oh. Lovely, melancholic, kind of slow, mid-tempo, dreamy. That's Gene. Kind of like Set You Free This Time. Chip Douglas did a great job. A little informal bass playing there and just some sweet harmonies, oohs behind Gene. Gene Clark, what a talent. I'm glad Chip Douglas did that tribute to him. The name of the song, If I Hang Around. Well, that's it. That's my first, and who knows if I'll do another podcast on the odds and ends of Bird's musicality, the Bird's back catalog, Bird oddities, whatever you want to call it. They believe me, folks, there's more. So if you want to hear more, contact me through the sidgriffin.com website and let me know your thoughts. Our engineer is, of course, Kevin Stokes, as ever. I thank Sonia for being the wonderful person that she is and doing the introductions to these podcasts. This is a fairly long podcast, and I've been fairly long-winded, but I'm going to extend that long-windedness by saying it's the holiday season. Much love to you and yours, no matter what faith you are, or if you have any faith at all. We send season's greetings to you and yours. It's been a rough year for this old world with pollution on the rise and climate change affecting everything, and two major wars going on right now, besides all the little wars that are going on. But remember, to everything there is a season, and there is a time for peace. These guys and the Birds sang about it. Maybe one day we can all make it actually come together and happen. A time for peace. I swear, it's not too late. Goodbye, everybody. I'm Sid Griffin, and it's been a gas talking to you once again. Take care of yourselves.